From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 24th day of April, 2026. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlo. He's a GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Ag and Environment reporter for Illinois Public Media, Abigail Botar, will be here with results from last night's Champaign County Board meeting as it relates to a moratorium on data centers. And then we'll turn our attention as we wrap up our time together to Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions of Agrible. Oh, and if you can stay with us for the whole of the hour, you'll hear all of our Commodity Week program too. If not, it's up online right now at willag.org, willag.org. Our panelists this week included Kurt Kimmel, Dave Chatterton, and Brian Stark.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Mike Zuzlo, GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to take a look at the marketplace for the day. Hello, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, Todd. Thanks for having me. Happy Friday to you and everybody out there on the plains and on the Illinois plateau and the black dirt out there.
Yeah, so a lot of people had been moving, a little rainfall that caused things to slow down. A lot of bad weather in your part of the world, or at least to the south and to the east or west of you, I believe. So things have slowed down. However, let's start there. What has planting progress been like in the Corn Belt portion of Kansas or along that Nebraska-Kansas line?
Very fast and very rapid. I think that's where, being in both the Western Corn Belt and the hard red wheat belt and those two overlapping, you can get a pretty clear picture with the drought update this week and how the market reacted to missed rainfall totals and sending hard red wheat up 30 cents on Thursday after, you know, having been mostly sideways for most of the week until then. We really do have a very fast pace going. We got shut out a little bit a few days ago with those storms that came through, but we're running once again. And the crop conditions, crop progress numbers, planting progress numbers look pretty, you know, good to me, Todd, as far as what I've seen in Kansas and Missouri and what I've heard in Nebraska. And I think that was, I think the high frequency trading really got active midweek, and a lot of that was based upon weather, whether you're talking about wheat, corn, or soybeans. And I think the USDA acreage survey news on Wednesday really brought in that high frequency trade too, and reassociated the marketplace with the idea that bean acres could be going up and corn acres could be going down because too wet in many parts of the central Corn Belt, north of you, obviously. And then on farther north, and obviously Iowa, what was 14 points behind in corn this week. I think the trade started to get very nervous about the loss of corn acres because of these two things happening, weather and USDA reevaluating their acreage report for June 30th. So that seemed to be the main driver to me in the trade, a lot more high frequency price action. Outside markets, probably part of the reason for that too, is because we didn't see a lot happen in terms of price action trend wise. It was just a lot of spinning of wheels.
Can you take up the wheat for just a moment? You have long liked wheat to be able to lead the marketplace. Is there enough trouble in the United States in the hard red winter wheat growing regions of Oklahoma and parts of Kansas to really cause the wheat to continue to move higher, given what the supplies look like globally?
Yeah, that is the most important question I think I've been asked in the last 3 months, Todd, because we are really at an inflection point. And what I've said this week, and I did another show with Professor O'Brien from K-State, and we both took up the wheat, and we both were very much in sync, which always makes me feel good because he's farther west and has a lot better feelers than I do. I think since I've lived out here and what I've seen from clients and what they've told me, between mid-late April and mid-late May is really what makes the wheat crop nowadays. It seems as though we can go through freezes pretty well. The genetics are much hardier than they used to be. They can go through heavy rains fairly well, but it's the drought in the later part of spring and hail storms in the later part of spring that I think are the most concerning. Now, I'll qualify that a little bit with the soft red wheat, because you folks in that eastern part of the wheat belt, the soft red wheat belt, some areas have just gotten unbelievable historic amounts of rain. So that's something I'm watching. But as far as out here, I think we're near a 2012 inflection point in what we dealt with in Illinois and Indiana in corn back in 2012. In other words, the next 35, 45 days, I think we could lose this crop if these models and this weather pattern doesn't shift. But Friday, the trade saw and I saw the weather patterns look very different than what we had been looking at for most of the week. And not just one rain, but two, three, four rains, and what could be a terrific pattern shift. Big coverage and big rains in just the nick of time.
Now let's come back to corn and soybeans. So when you're thinking about how the crude oil pushes both of those crops as it's related to the war in Iran, what issues do you see that are supportive and what things might not be so supportive?
Yeah, what we've seen the last 2 or 3 weeks, and this gets pretty deep, and this is where you can only get so much, on Will Radio at no cost. I would really recommend getting a subscription at this point with what we're dealing with, because we are really dealing with the 1980s right now. And so what I'm going to say is much deeper, that needs to be, probed a lot more. But what we've seen the last 2 weeks is the market has taken crude oil higher and bonds lower when they're fearful of worsening conditions. And as the crude oil goes higher, the bond market says the Fed's got to raise rates, so let's shoot the bonds lower. That stalls out the gold and the riskier assets and commodities as a whole. So I've been asked a lot, why isn't the corn following the wheat right now? Well, traditionally, historically, it takes about 30 to 45 days for the corn to catch up to the wheat. And I think this is a perfect environment for that, or is as perfect as you can get, just because of the springtime. Now is about wheat. 40 days from now, it'll be about corn and beans. The second thing is the element of the risk and the investment trade. And so if the interest rates are going up and the crude oil's going up and the Fed is getting ready to raise rates, the trade's going to be very leery about buying too hard into commodities unless they have a better reason than they do right now. Again, they probably should be buying into commodities, because we're going to see a lot more expensive commodities in 6 months, if you ask me.
Are you telling me that that portends stagflation?
It does, but I don't think we have gotten near the jolt in the other commodity sectors that is deserving of what we're going to probably have to go through in the energy. So what I guess I'm getting at is, if we go up another leg in energy, I would expect that the corn would follow and the wheat would follow, even if the bond yields are going up as well.
Okay, now turn your attention to the biofuels. Are there concerns with the RVO? I know that Ben Brown talked to us a couple of weeks ago, the FAPRI, the Food Agriculture Policy Research Institute there at the University of Missouri, looking into what EPA had put out and how USDA is working with that for the renewable volume obligations, concern that they don't kick in until 28, maybe. That could cause a problem for soybean oil. Maybe address that shortly. And then ethanol as well on E15 year round. Still trying to get that through Congress, though we do have an executive order for this summer.
Yeah, I'm not as worried about the RVO kicking in until 28, because we've got an Asian market that is going gangbusters to replace lost carbon through the biodiesel and, Indonesia, Malaysia. But I think the biodiesel market has been a savior to the soybean market at this point, especially as we get ready to meet with President Xi in mid-May. If the US-Iran situation stays the way it is or gets worse, I really question whether they're even going to meet, Todd, because many and or more, I should say, in Asia are starting to say, if President Trump goes to China, he's going to have to give up Taiwan to get China to play ball with him when it comes to either ag exports or getting the Iran situation solved. So it's getting pretty high stakes as this Strait of Hormuz thing goes on. And I think that's something we really want to keep an eye on. And it could be, one of those pitfalls for the soybean complex. I've been bearish beans for a long time. I remain that way, even though they've been fighting me very well.
Hey, thanks so much. We'll talk with you again next week.
Thank you, sir.
That, of course, is Mike Suzzolo. He's at globalcomresearch.com. In today's agricultural news, the Champaign County Board passed a one-year moratorium last night on new data centers. IPM's Abigail Botar reports the board reversed a previous decision to have a shorter moratorium.
More than 100 people attended the meeting. The original proposal was a 12-month moratorium, but it was voted out of the Environmental and Land Use Committee as a 9-month pause. Sixth grader Samuel Tomori told the board he's worried about the amount of water a data center would use.
We need the water from our aquifer, but we do not need AI.
A few union leaders spoke in favor of the 9-month moratorium, including Chrissy Weber with Roofers Local 97.
Extending that to 12 months or leaving it open-ended does not necessarily improve the outcome.
With the 12-month moratorium in place, the county's newly formed data center task force can continue to develop zoning and permitting standards for future data center projects. I'm Abigail Botar, IPM News.
Finally, let's take a look at a survey that shows 205 million cropland acres are rented out in the United States. The USDA this spring issued the 10-year Ownership and Transition of Agricultural Land Survey. It's called TOTAL for short, and details who owns farmland in the USA. It shows about 340 million acres of U.S. agricultural land are rented out. This is for all uses, including pasture, and excludes the public grazing lands owned by the United States government. The Plains region accounts for 43% of all the rented acres, about 149 million, while holding a disproportionately smaller percentage of the nation's total landlords. We'll get to that in a moment. The Plain States include both the Dakotas, North and South, Nebraska, Kansas, and Texas. Things are a bit different in the Midwest, Minnesota, Iowa, Missouri, Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, and Ohio. There are nearly 800,000 absentee landlords in the Midwest. Again, those are owners that do not farm. That's 38% of the total across the nation, but they own just 21% of all the agricultural acres. So recapping here, about twice the number of acres are rented out in the Plain States by half the number of landlords compared to the Midwest. In total, across the nation, there are roughly 2 million landlords. They own around 167 million acres of cropland and 98 million acres of pasture. Again, those are the absentee or non-operating landlords. If you include the crop share landlords, the total number of owned cropland acres jumps to about 205 million. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Let's take a look at the weather forecast now. Eric Snodgrass is here. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions. Hi, Eric. Thanks for being with us. It appears that there was quite a bit of severe weather to the west of us overnight last night. Can you start with that in the Plain States?
Yeah. The question is, how far into the Plain States did we get this? And a lot of it was in the eastern side of, you know, of Oklahoma and Kansas, and then it moved into parts of Missouri. And actually rained this morning, and it's still raining now over the Mid-South, which has been so dry. But before we talk about that drought, it is important to note that these storms have packed a pretty serious punch. We are suspecting, as news comes in today, about some fatalities in parts of Oklahoma. An Air Force base was hit, and some of the video of the tornadoes just, it's just incredible. And that's been interesting, Todd, because for most of March and April, if you look at where the corridor of severe weather has been, it's been from parts of Texas into eastern Oklahoma, getting over to eastern Kansas and most of Missouri. Illinois, we're leading the nation in tornado reports right now, set a new record for record-sized hail in Illinois back in March, and it's also gone up in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Iowa. And to be honest, I did see a lot of planners rolling earlier this week ahead of what is going to be, we got rain this morning, of course, and then we've got more severe storms coming on Monday to the Midwest, specifically to Illinois. So I just want to tell everybody, please, please be very weather aware on Monday. I know a lot of people listening also listen to Andrew Pritchard. Andrew Pritchard's a colleague of mine. We work together at Nutrien. And along with our other colleague, Matt Reardon, we've had a lot of discussion today about the severe weather potential on Monday. So just stay weather aware, listen to the forecast. maps, and then on that day, have access to radar, weather.gov, and any sort of device that can give you a warning. So four more days of severe weather in the central United States going forward.
Good to know that Andrew will be on the job on Monday. I know he will be, and he is
He's good.
Yeah, he's good, and he's the IPM, or the Illinois Public News home station meteorologist as well. So we'll be able to get information from him right away. Now, talk to me about this drought you discussed.
Yeah, so I mean, I told you the quarter that's wet, but on either side of it, it's incredibly dry. And it starts in the Delta, it goes over parts of the Ohio River Valley. I mean, even southern Indiana has been very dry, while all the severe weather and wet conditions have been in northern Indiana. Well, you go farther to the south, we had fires in Georgia this week, and I just was texting with a colleague of mine in southern Georgia, and he's like, we are not planting yet. I mean, just imagine southern Georgia not getting a crop established all the way to this point in April. I mean, usually we're upset if we're not done, you know, at this point in April, and here we go with places much farther south that are just waiting because it's been so dry. So he says, well, I have any rain coming? I said, maybe a half inch to an inch over the next 2 weeks, which is not enough to ameliorate the drought. And by the way, I looked at that up, how much rain it would take to break the drought, and get these numbers. We need between 15 and 25 inches of rain from the Delta and Mid-South all the way into the Southeast in order to completely end the drought. And I know one thing about drought, Todd, and that is I've never, ever in my life seen drought break gently, right? I mean, think about what happened to us in spring this year. We had all that fall drought. We had a couple of big snowstorms in winter. And then to break our drought here in Illinois, we had to have a lot of severe weather, hail, tornadoes, and some pretty nasty stuff. So there's questions about that. And of course, you know about all the issues in the wheat country out on the Western Plains, and they're just waiting to get storms back far enough to the west to revive, you know, their overall drought situation as well. So Todd, it's really, I hate to kind of overuse the term, but it's another spring of haves and have-nots, and the haves have way too much and the have-nots have nothing. And so that just continues in the near term.
One of the things we may be worried that we might have in our part of the world is some really cool, possibly cold weather coming up next weekend. Do you think that'll take place?
I do. I'm not worried about a frost, but if you get your crop planted, because we will have a window to get crops planted in Illinois after this event comes through on Monday. We're going to open things up, but the temperature is going to drop, and we're going to have some lows in the upper 30s, maybe mid 30s in the northern part of this state going toward that time frame. And I think even all the way through May 3rd, May 4th, we're still tucked away in some cooler air coming out of Canada, which, by the way, this morning, it's the second week straight of heavy snows in Saskatchewan and parts of Manitoba and even back in Alberta. So there's a source of cold air, and it seems like it's going to be around, but I don't see frost risk for us right now. I don't see it here right in central Illinois. But if I'm up a little farther to the north, maybe into southern Wisconsin, very northern reaches of Iowa, or into Minnesota, I don't think we're done yet with our last frost. There's a small chance, it's not big, but a small chance they could deal with some colder weather.
We'll have to look at the state crop progress reports on Monday afternoon to see how things might feel by the time we get to the end of next week for them, if this cold air continues to be in the forecast. When you get into June, July, August, are you thinking about some different prospects for the summer?
Well, I am, but I don't know anybody else is. So what I'm talking about is we had the release of the new Climate Prediction Center forecast for summer. And it like bullseyed, colder conditions over Illinois and Wisconsin and Iowa and parts of Indiana, colder than normal summer, not like 2009 or 2014, but still cool. And I said, you know, it doesn't make sense given this El Nino that's coming through that we would be cool. And sure enough, I go back and look, and there's not a strong relationship that you could make a call on how cool summer could be given the El Nino that's forming. In fact, what does the El Nino typically do? It tends to anchor, I mean, a tremendous amount of heat from like Texas to Georgia. And what we tend to get in those summers is a lot of ridge riding thunderstorms. And Todd, that usually makes a crop, but it also gives us more and more risk of more severe winds and hail damage later into the season. So I don't think we're done with severe weather anytime soon. But if we have a big east-based El Nino, so think like 2015 or 1997, or even late in the year 1982, we just tended to storm all along the periphery of those events, which is us. It gets us rain, the periphery of the ridge, down in down south. So I'm worried about Texas more than I'm worried about Illinois going into the summer.
Speaking of south, second crop corn in South America, Brazil, doing okay?
Well, they were doing great, but you know, the monsoon typically ends at the beginning of May, and the newest forecasts, the forecast for the last 2 weeks has been dry. And now we got another two-week forecast that's dry for the Cerrado. So I think the rain shut off a bit early. And we know that about 20% of that crop went in late. So there could be an issue with the way that the corn finishes. I don't know if anybody's talking about it. I'm just watching it every day and keeping an eye on it. And every forecast keeps coming out dry for the Cerrado, which is the main part of Brazil's central growing regions, which extends into that center west Mato Grosso as well.
We'll talk with you again next week.
That sounds good. Thanks, Todd.
You're welcome. That, of course, is Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.